Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, Thursday, February the 22nd, 2024. Thanks for listening again to AFR. Joining me in studio here in Tupelo, MS, is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Hello.
And in Kansas City, Kansas, is our good buddy, Dr. Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Good. Your cell phone working all right?
I just discovered 10 minutes ago it's not working. I got that, you know, everything, Wi-Fi is working fine, but the cell phone isn't. So I get that little SOS up at the top. Which, where you know, where the bar should be?
You got AT&T? No,
I guess. Evidently.
Well, that's what I have, and my phone's working semi. Mm. But if you don't know, most people probably do, unless their cell phones is where they get the news, and their cell phones haven't been working all morning. There's a big national,
outage
for cell phone coverage for a lot of AT&T and some others, but AT&T, Fred, right?
Primarily AT&T. At one point, 70,000 customers. This all started apparently around 2:30 this morning, Central Time. Something happened, and that's the way we have to put it right now, because we're not sure. There's all kinds of speculation out there what may be behind this.
Yeah.
One of the possibilities is a software problem with some phones. But if you have, like, if you have another company, a Verizon or Comcast, Xfinity, whatever the case may be, if you have one of those phones and try to call an AT&T customer, you may not be able to get them. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, your husband and wife and you both have AT&T phones, you may not be able to talk to each other. So they're working on this.
That's a problem I've had with my wife, Allison. This morning, we haven't been able to, her phone, I went home to check on her because I'd tell her what's going on because we couldn't get each other. Nobody could get her in our whole family.
Right.
And so what I'd like to do at this point is do a test. I'm going to test her phone. So I'm going to give her number out on the radio.
555-867-5309.
If anybody can get through to her, tell her I'll bring lunch home.
You're at work.
Right.
Well, it is a big story. Mm-hmm. And, again, we don't know why exactly, right? I don't know that have we heard any reports on why this happened exactly?
Not officially.
At first I thought, well, here we go.
This is it.
I was thinking, here we go. This is China or Russia doing a cyber attack.
Yeah.
And we don't know whether that's true or not, right?
I mean, no.
All we know is it's down. I did notice an article that came out in the last hour where, and this is instructive, an article just about the outage. So it's just hot, a hot article saying a great many of the users whose phones are down are texting or trying to get on the internet. They think the world is coming to an end, which I guess I want to say this is less about Bible prophecy, but it shows how, Fred, how incredibly dependent we are on technology today. Yeah. We almost can't live without it.
That's it exactly. And it is just a reminder of how dependent we've become on these things. A couple of our guys in the newsroom this morning who have AT&T phones, we have a security system tied to the phone, and they couldn't get on because of that, because their AT&T phone wasn't working. Everything is so interconnected today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've just, because it's convenient, we have embraced that interconnectedness. But then something like this happens, and we say, wait a minute, this is extremely inconvenient now.
Yeah.
Well, it's terrifying to think you could pick up your phone and suddenly it is a strange feeling. I picked up my phone, and once I turned off Wi-Fi, I'm looking down at it right now where the bars are supposed to be. Mm. There's little dots, but if I turned off Wi-Fi, the SOS, which means this thing is not working.
You mean your phone is working properly with Wi-Fi, but not without. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, right. People are having different issues in this outage. My wife and I are on the same phone plan. She has AT&T, as I do. And I called her this morning from here, and she picked right up. But you can't call me on my phone.
Yeah. Well, if there's a malfunction with the ATMs, I'm hoping that my bank account will be full of money. I don't know where it came from.
Right, right.
Yes.
And then I will be stuck with the dilemma of, do I report this?
Yeah.
Who do I report?
You start walking around singing Showers of Blessing, we know what happened.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's a big story. And I'm kind of surprised that it hasn't been resolved already.
Yeah. Well,
we're talking about some of the smartest people in the world, and we're looking at, what, 6 hours now, 7 hours, 8 hours, something like that?
2:30 Central this morning, so, yeah, we're talking about 8 hours now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One guy told Fox, or actually Fox pulled his quote from somewhere, but some gentleman is of the opinion that he should, quote, get a stimulus check for this. Another person said, I lost my cell phone service at 5:56 a.m. Eastern. I was in the middle of working when I lost it. Now I can't do anything.
I think we need to go for reparations, guys.
That's right.
I really do. This is our shot right here.
Yes.
Work the angles, get the money, right?
Yeah.
Go for reparations. All right, so.
A little bit of irony here.
What now?
Yesterday in our neighborhood, there were two young ladies walking around, knocking on doors, trying to get people to switch their cell phone service to AT&T.
Oh,
well, glad we didn't go into that one.
That's right.
Well, AT&T is maybe, I don't know who has more customers nationally, AT&T or Verizon. They're probably one, two. T-Mobile's right there, too.
Pretty big, yes.
Wouldn't be the cell phone towers necessarily, because I think a lot of these companies, they all use the same towers. Many of them do.
But if there's
I think there is a piece
of software specific to AT&T,
right?
That's one speculation that it could be, which may explain why Wi-Fi works, but not if you're depending on 5G
right.
or whatever that is.
You know what? Remember the old commercial with the guy for Verizon? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I started to say that.
They'll probably bring him back now, and they'll say, AT&T, can you hear me now?
Not yet.
Hey, well, that guy sold out, though, didn't he?
He ended up going to a different – another cell phone provider bought his character.
Yeah, like, he
bought
was
the rights
sale.
To it, and that's how he was like a customer that transitioned from one company to the other.
Yeah, he was a Verizon, mm-hmm. right? And then he went free agent.
Right.
Like athletes do.
Maybe T-Mobile or maybe one of the smaller.
Was it Sprint or something? Who'd he go with?
Yeah.
I think it was Sprint. I think he went with Sprint. They gave him a life, a 10-year deal, something like that, And it doesn't matter, even if he gets injured, he'll still be paid.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
Good work if you can get it.
Did you get that joke, Brent? Okay. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. One question I have is, if your cell phone didn't work, and how do you report that? That's a mystery of life right there. All right, you look bewildered,
I'm trying to
Chris.
Think, trying to think. What
What's
would
the
you
answer
do?
To that question?
Well, because most phone companies, like a desk phone, for those that still have
What's
a landline,
that?
That's AT&T, a lot of them.
We do have a landline here mm-hmm. at the office.
I've heard of desk phones.
But most people have gotten rid of their land phones at home, right?
Yeah.
You have
landline? No, we haven't had one for 20 years.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So we don't either.
We may have to go back to the carrier pigeon.
So I had to go. I drove back home 15 minutes. This morning, because I couldn't get out, so my wife on the phone, I drove back home, tell her what was going on, because nobody could get her, and so on the phone. So then when you do something like that, you don't want to scare somebody, right? So I don't want to get shot walking into my own house, because my wife's Annie Oakley.
Huh? Right.
Huh? I'm more careful.
It would happen after you get all the money from the ATM.
Yeah. My wife,
ATM too.
She's got all these weapons and stuff, and
sit in the car and blow the horn first.
I've got it.
You don't want to surprise Allison.
No, I told her, you get the whatever you got in there, AR, and I'll get my 7-iron. We'll take them down. Intruders.
Uh-huh.
All right. What's first other than the national outage of
yes
phones.
Well, I've got a couple of sound bites here from a big event that took place yesterday in Washington, D.C. Members of the House had a sit-down meeting with the brother of Joe Biden. Jim Biden is the name of the brother. And they confronted him about what he knew about his family's business dealings. Specifically, what did he know about Joe Biden's involvement in this? Now, Jim Biden maintains his brother didn't do anything wrong. The family's everything's great. But they confronted Jim Biden with proof that he lied during his testimony. For example, they showed him some paperwork that involved signatures from the Biden family. And as a result, Republicans are saying he lied during his testimony with them. I've got a couple of different sound bites here. Let's begin with this one. It's Congressman Russell Fry from South Carolina talking about Jim Biden being confronted with proof that he lied during his testimony. Clip one.
Jim Biden said that he had no involvement and that he was not in an agreement with Rob Walker, Hunter Biden, and James Gilyard. But when presented with a document that he signed with those gentlemen coming together for a business arrangement, he changed his story there and said he wasn't familiar with signing that particular document.
It's funny how everybody always forgets or they fall back.
Yeah, you know what? I think in the court, who knows if this will ever be taken to a court of law. That is the Biden family, including President Joe Biden, getting money directly from a foreign adversary or somebody, the quid pro quo, as they say, back when he was vice president. Or that's when a lot of this was going on, right? So whether he's ever are impeached for it, I don't know. I think the vast majority of people in this country, even if they're going to still vote for Biden, they know that his Hunter Biden, it's no secret, and his Joe Biden's brother, they were killing it around the world.
Yes.
Right?
Ukraine, China.
Especially Hunter Biden. I mean, he was getting paid for, you know, the Ukrainian gas company
Burisma.
Was paying him for his... quote expertise
because
sit
he
on a board
so much about energy production
so and that's one of the things people talk about the Ukraine being corrupt you know they have a history of corruption going way back and that's a lot that's another reason a side issue why a lot of people have problems giving Ukraine money to fight Russia is because that's a lot of money. We don't know where it goes. Whose pockets is it going in? What's it really being used for? A lot of questions having to do with Ukraine. But anyway, back to the main point of that story. This congressman is saying that Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother, lied under oath.
He said, I didn't sign anything. I didn't know anything. We didn't do anything wrong, to which they presented him with the paperwork bearing his own signature, showing that he knew something because he wouldn't have signed it had he not been aware of that
situation. Also, there was the, you know, the, what do you call it at the White House, the records where people sign in to make visits to people.
The log, the official log, right?
Yes.
The log. The official log showed, this story was about a year ago, showed that Hunter Biden's business associates made many visits to the White House when Joe Biden was VP.
Yes.
And then Joe Biden says, remember him saying famously or infamously, I never talked to my son about his business interest. Nobody believed that. So why would we believe that he didn't? Any of this. So, all right. Next story, Chris.
Well, let me play this clip real quick and we'll tie kind of a bow around that particular topic. I also had some audio from Representative Jason Smith. He's a Republican from Missouri, and he says he's not buying Jim Biden's testimony that he was not selling access to Joe, much like Hunter was. Clip two.
We have numerous WhatsApp messages and emails provided to us by the IRS whistleblowers that show James Biden was intimately involved along Hunter, Tony Bobulinski, Rob Walker, and others in selling access to his brothers to foreigners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have testimony, sworn testimony from Bobulinski. And also, what was it, several days ago, one of the sources the FBI had allegedly about the, who said there was, that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden got $5 million each. This goes back to the Burisma deal. But he was arrested the other day. He's now accused of getting bad information from the Russians.
To the FBI, right?
Yes. And people.
Or the FBI arrested him, right?
Well, here's the thing. This came just days before Bob Alinsky, Jim Biden, and next week I think it's Hunter Biden goes behind closed doors with the House Oversight and Judiciary Committee. So there are people who are suspect that all of a sudden a source, one of the sources that the Republicans were using, gets arrested and is charged with falsehoods.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next story.
In other news, we've got an interesting situation involving an attorney in Maricopa County, Arizona, and the district attorney of New York City. I'm going to set up the soundbite here because I have one. Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell says she's not going to extradite a suspected murderer by the name of Rod Al-Mansouri to New York City because Rachel Mitchell, the county attorney there, thinks D.A. Alvin Bragg is too soft on crime and he's just going to let this suspected murderer of walking. Clip 3.
We will not be agreeing to extradition. We're going to keep him here. These are mandatory prison sentences. And having observed the treatment of violent criminals in the New York area by the Manhattan D.A. there, Alvin Bragg, I think it's safer to keep him here and keep him in custody so that he cannot be out doing this to individuals either in our state or county or anywhere in the United States.
This is interesting. This is it made national news. It was a couple weeks ago. There was these illegal immigrants in New York City, four or five of them. Were they teenagers or they were young?
Young men.
Young men,
mm-hmm.
and they attacked some police officers, right? Is this right. the same story, right, we're telling?
Different story.
Okay, my apologies. Anyway, they some of them fleed.
What you're talking about, the young men who were attacked the cops, they get arrested, but the court lets them go.
Right, and they get on buses to go to California.
Well, I think they went to Maricopa County, Arizona, and they were arrested there. But this is a different incident. Okay. The suspect in this case has been arrested in Maricopa County, Arizona, in connection with the stabbing of two women.
In New York City?
No.
In Arizona. Okay.
He is wanted in New York City on a murder charge.
I gotcha.
All right. So this Maricopa County attorney, Rachel Mitchell, is saying, I'm not giving this guy up to New York because Alvin Bragg, the district attorney in New York, he's got a habit of letting people go.
He does, yeah.
So we want to keep this guy here.
I got you.
We want to address the charges here, the two, and I think it's attempted murder charges against this guy for stabbing these two women. Mm-hmm. We're going to deal with him here, and there'll be lengthy sentences if he's found guilty. And after all of that, then I'll give him up to Alvin Bragg. But I'm not letting him go right now.
Yeah, what happens in New York and Manhattan is the DA is the Alvin Bragg.
Yes.
And he's one of the Soros-funded DAs.
Democrat.
Like Trump, yeah.
As there are in many, many big cities, they have DAs that are,
right.
They were in part, at least, funded by George Soros. And so they were funded so that they would do nothing to harden criminals, basically. Not to be a turnstile. In the name of social justice, right?
Yes.
In the name of social justice, we let, cash bails are discriminatory. Mm-hmm. So we can't have those. So what we do is we just let people off. They commit some kind of even violent crime, and the next day or that same day, these DAs, like Alvin Bragg, they let them back out on the streets. And that's going on all over the country, especially in some of these liberal big cities. It's insane. Yes, it's insane, and also it's self-destructive. We see what's happened in San Francisco. It got so bad they recalled the voters, the liberal voters in San Francisco said, "We've had enough of this nuttiness. We're going to recall this DA."
Yes,
and they did. And then we see other places. So this one in Arizona said, "No, we're not sending this killer." Basically back to New York to be let go.
That's right.
Or to be mixed, we're going to charge him here first. Good for her.
Yep.
But would she be considered a peer of Alvin Bragg's? Is she a DA type?
She's described as the county attorney.
For Maricopa County.
Maricopa County.
But she would be on the same level.
Yeah.
They're both elected. She's a Republican, by the way. And, of course, Alvin Bragg is a Democrat.
I'll tell you what, if we you just look in your local newspaper, don't where you live in the country, and you see these crimes that are being committed, the violent crimes, armed robbery, a breaking in, assault, all these things. Most all these people have multiple offenses on their they have a rap sheet.
Yes.
And we're just, even in, that happened in our town. We were looking at the paper last night. Here were these, it doesn't happen much, but we had some, a gun not too far from where we are here. Teenagers on a Sunday afternoon. Teenagers, they're having they get into a gunfight. Somebody, one person dies. Well, they had the people they were dealing with. They had a rap sheet. Okay, so Ray, a lot of these criminals aren't ever even punished very long at all.
Well, either, and they're not even arrested. If they're arrested, they're let go.
Right,
they're given a slap on the wrist. They don't pay any penalty, and that's happening in big cities across America.
Is that the judge's fault or the DA's fault or both? When this happens on this.
I got to believe it starts with the DA,
okay,
who refuses to prosecute.
Okay,
who says let them go or pleads it down to a nothing offense. We've got soft judges, but we've got people like Alvin Bragg in office, paid for by George Soros.
But don't they do this in the name of social justice?
Yeah.
In other words, we've got too many black young men in prison. We can't have any more, so let them go free, no matter what they do. That's what I get from it all.
Yep. That's what it seems to be coming down to. Listen, there almost now is not a week that goes by when we see videos of people with already have police records. They're assaulting people. They're going into stores. They're stealing. This is just going on.
They've been emboldened.
Yes. And many in the black community who live in these neighborhoods, they're scared to death.
Yeah.
And they're upset because of liberal district attorneys aren't prosecuting these bad guys. And they're now starting to put pressure. We're seeing this in Chicago. We're seeing it in New York.
Yes. These local citizens, African Americans, they're upset.
Yes.
Because of what this is doing to their communities.
And they feel unsafe.
They live in fear.
Yes.
Right. And there was, in fact, in Oakland, California, you know who's leading the efforts to get more police and to get more enforcement of the laws? The NAACP.
Yeah.
The local chapter of the NAACP.
Yeah.
They're saying the lack of policing and the softness on criminals is leading to the destruction of our town.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, all right. Let's go ahead and take our break right here. We've got a lot more coming up. We don't have any guests today, right?
No, we do.
Yes, we do. Okay, maybe I'm going to set this up real quickly. Maybe you read about this case in Indiana where a mother and father had their child taken away by Child Protective Services, I think, in Indiana, supposedly because the parents wouldn't acknowledge the child's gender fluidity or gender identity.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to the attorney from the Beckett Fund that is representing this family. We'll be back and talk to them after the break. Stay with us.
I'd like to take a minute and have a heart-to-heart with you. If you're able, place your hand over your heart. Can you feel it? My strong heartbeat reminds me that I'm alive. See, it's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception and at just 3 weeks is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. That's where Preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat and see their perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. On AFR, Tim, Fred, Chris, and Ray. And I told you right before the break about a story out of the state of Indiana. And joining us right now is attorney with Beckett, the Beckett Fund, Joe Davis. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
This is Tim Wildman. And where are you, sir?
We are based in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Tell us about your organization first, Beckett.
Sure, yeah, the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. So we are a nonprofit law firm that protects religious freedom for people of all faiths. We have an undefeated record at the U.S. Supreme Court.
What's the record?
You put me on the spot. It's a lot to zero.
Yeah, I can confirm that, yeah.
A lot to zero, undefeated. I wanted to know, is it 1-0 or 20-0? Anyway, okay, so go ahead.
Closer to the latter, yeah.
Okay. All right, so Joe, so for those who don't know anything about this case in Indiana, tell us what it's about.
Sure. I mean, this is really one of the most chilling incursions on religious liberty that you can imagine, even as somebody who's worked in this field for quite a while. A few years ago, back in 2021, the state of Indiana launched an investigation into two parents, Mary and Jeremy Cox, because they, informed by their Christian religious beliefs, declined to call their son by pronouns and a name that were contrary to his biological sex. The state then, you know, did the investigation and then took the child away, removed him from his parents' loving home, and then imposed a gag order on the parents that prevented them in their handful of visitation hours with their own child from discussing their beliefs about sex and gender. And this is really an extreme violation of Mary and Jeremy's rights as parents, as Americans. And so now they're asking the U.S. Supreme Court to protect them and protect other parents from facing this kind of situation.
Why is it the governor of Indiana or somebody who's has authority in Indiana doing something about this?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, Indiana of all places. Right.
Yeah, it's a conservative. It's a red state. I mean, we're talking about the home of Mike Pence, for instance. So I don't understand. Is there more to the story than what you described?
Let me address that. I mean, it really is unfortunate to see Indiana's leaders now at the Supreme Court, you know, making excuses for the ideological things that their lower level bureaucrats obviously did here. Right. This is the Department of Child Services that instituted all this, and they were the ones, you know, that took the actions that were then fought about in the courts for a while. But now you do have the state of Indiana, its leaders, coming in and making excuses. And they say, you know, it wasn't really about the gender identity dispute. It was about other issues. But the record is absolutely clear that these were loving parents that were ready and willing to help their child address his mental health issues in every way.
Where do they live? Where do they live in Indiana? I mean, what's their names?
Yeah, their names are Mary and Jeremy Cox. There's a lot about this case that, you know, is under seal, so I think leave it at that.
But what happened to their child? How old is their child, and where is their child now?
He is over 18 now. He's aged out of the system, so this removal ultimately, you know, tragically became permanent.
But he's over 18. He can go visit them or they vice versa if they want to right now, right?
That's right. That's right. But, you know, the point is that they removed this child when he was a teenager.
Yes.
Removed him permanently from the parents' home.
Yeah, I understand. He's over 18 now, but the facts of the matter are what's dangerous here. And that, okay, so let me understand this, make sure I understand this right, and then then you can tell us when the Supreme Court's going to hear this case. How long ago was this?
This is 2021.
So 2021, when their child, a male, was a minor, the Indiana Child Protection Service physically took the child from the home and put the child again, the minor, right? Would have been what, 16 or 17 at the time. Put them because the parents claim, and you're representing them, that the parents would not acknowledge that the child wanted to be called something other than his proper sex. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, all right. I'm not advocating violence, but if that happened to me, there'd probably be a shootout. And now I'm just talking from the gut here. I don't advocate violence, and I don't. But I think my feelings represent almost everybody listening right now. This is complete government tyranny. I mean, it's what this is. Not only, and it's a complete violation of your constitutional rights. So when is the court case? So it's made its way all the way to the Supreme Court, or did you guys jump ahead, or how did the court case go?
Yeah, that's right. So the lower courts in Indiana upheld this very egregious action, as you said, an egregious action. I mean, the state came in, they took the child out of his parents' home, and they put him in a home that would affirm his new gender identity. They said he had to be placed in a place where he would be, you know, quote, accepted for who she is. So this really is about as egregious as it gets. The lower courts said this was okay, and now the case is at the U.S. Supreme Court. And the parents are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case and to reverse what the lower courts did.
Chris?
Hey, Joe, it's Chris here from AFN. One of the questions that we often ask you or Lori or whoever it is at Beckett or ADF, First Liberty, what have you, is this. Let's imagine somebody is in another part of the state, or they're in another state and they think, well, that's unfortunate, but it doesn't impact me. Just to help put things in perspective for people, why should somebody in any part of the United States be concerned about paying attention to, you know, this issue involving this couple in this state?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a dramatic precedent that would sign off on these kinds of things happening all over the country. I mean, if it can happen in Indiana, as I said before, it can happen anywhere. And in fact, there are other states, like on the West Coast, that have passed laws that actually encourage children, you know, if they can't receive gender-affirming care at home, if their parents aren't on board with their gender transition, they can come to the state, and the state will help them out, and will keep that private from the parents. So this whole area is you know, currently exploding, is likely to continue doing so, and that's why it's especially important for the U.S. Supreme Court to step in.
Joe, Fred Jackson here. Can you tell us who initiated the complaint with the Department of Child Services?
That is sealed. You know, a lot about these kind of Department of Child Services cases are under seal. So that's part of the sealed record. There was an anonymous complaint to the Department of Child Services.
Ray, you got any questions for Joe before we let him go?
Joe, Ray Pritchard here. So this is now going to go to the Supreme Court, and we know that they get a lot more requests for review than they actually grant. In your judgment, what are the chances that this Supreme Court, with a good number of conservative justices, what are the chances they're going to actually take up this case and make a judgment on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's always perilous to predict, but we're quite optimistic, like we are in many of the cases that we put up there in particular. But I mean, the court is very protective of religious liberty and has been willing to step in sort of these hot button issues and you know, it's absolutely imperative that it do so.
This is more than religious liberty. This is parental rights. My goodness gracious. I mean, if Ed Vitagliano, my associate here, he uses the comparison of, a girl who thinks she's fat, right? And when she's really anorexic. And so, parents, if you got that kind of situation, parents don't affirm the anorexia. They don't say, you're right, honey, you're fat. You're overweight. You need to lose weight. All the while they're killing themselves by starving themselves, right? You don't affirm that kind of self-destructive behavior. It's the same type thing here. You don't affirm a boy who's a minor living in your home. It's your child. You don't say, well, yeah, you're a girl. And then for the state to come in and say, if you don't call your son a girl, we're taking your kid away. Anyway, that's just terrible. And that's a mild word for this situation. Well, Joe, I'm sorry if I missed it. When will the case go before the Supreme Court?
So it's before the Supreme Court now for them to decide whether or not to hear the case. And we expect to hear an answer on that by this spring.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
It's Joe Davis, attorney with the Beckett Fund.
Listen, this is a story that's part of a much bigger story that's going on in our country right now, is to cut parents out. We have school districts that are advocating that parents not be told about what's going on at their school. A kid goes to a school counselor, and you have school districts now saying, we don't have to tell the mom and dad what's going on at school. So it's part of a much bigger problem that is just exploding across this country.
That's also why elections like school board, for example, matter.
Mm.
Huh?
Yes.
And state legislatures matter.
Yes.
You know, I know a lot of politics, Ray, we just think in terms of who the president is.
Right.
Or maybe a Senate race or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yes, those are critically important. But so many decisions are made at the city council, county commissioner, state legislature, who the governor is, who the DA is, all those kind of things. Go ahead.
Well, look, don't say to yourself, this could never happen where we live. If it could happen in Indiana, basically a red state, guarantee you, it's already happening in places like California, New York, in the blue areas of the country. So just because you live in a deep red area, it doesn't mean this couldn't happen. So Tim, to your point, who we put on the school boards locally and statewide matters hugely. And as a matter of fact, who we put in as attorney general and governor matters a great deal too. So
yeah, exactly.
This could happen anywhere.
You know, the other day, Chris helped me. We were having a story that we discussed, and we may have discussed it on the air. To Ray's point, there was a school district in Arizona, I think. It was a big school district, maybe the largest. And it was discovered that they were keeping a chart on parents, whether they affirmed their kid who claimed to be a transgendered. And they were, you know what I'm talking about? I don't know if that came out in a court case or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
This is going on.
Yes.
This is going on.
It is. And you know, as we pointed out, don't think it's just California and don't think it's New York.
Right.
This is happening in various states. It is happening primarily through the education system in many of these jurisdictions who believe that the school district, their officials know better than the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was it may have been Colorado.
Colorado instead of Arizona?
Yeah, it was from a few days ago. Okay. Should K-12 schools in Colorado be required to use students' chosen names on unofficial documents such as rosters and student IDs?
No, that's not the story I'm talking about, but that's relative.
Yeah, without a legal name change or parental notification.
Yeah, Steve Jordahl, I think Steve had that story last week. We'll ask him about it because he was familiar with the county. Maybe it is Colorado, but anyway, This sounds almost impossible, what Joe Davis was describing.
Yeah.
And especially in a red state,
mm-hmm.
for this to happen. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story.
Well, here's a positive story about what can happen.
We need a positive story, Chris.
You know, I try to be the K-Love guy every once in a while.
Yeah.
Positive and encouraging Chris Woodward. Okay. This is a positive story involving what happens when you lawyer up and you go to court with a group like Beckett or First Liberty, ADF, what have you. It's a story about Dr. Johnson Varkey. Some listeners may recognize his name, Dr. Johnson Varkey. He's a guy that we've covered for a couple of years now on AFN.net radio and print coverage. Dr. Varkey is a biology professor at a college called St. Philip's College in San Antonio, Texas. He's a biology professor teaching things involving biology.
Okay.
Now, he's also an associate pastor on the side, but in the classroom, he teaches biology because that's his day job.
At what school?
At St. Philip's College in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
Small public school there in San Antonio. Well, he was fired because he was teaching biology in the biology class. Now, the positive story is through a, getting assistance from First Liberty Institute, they have they've been able to get him back in the classroom by this fall. But here is his attorney, Kayla Toney, recalling the story of Dr. Johnson Varkey and what happened there at St. Philip's College, clip four.
He has taught human anatomy at St. Philip's College, which is a public community college, for the past 20 years. He taught over 1,500 students, never had any issues or complaints, received great performance reviews every year. And one day, a handful of students walked out of his class when he taught that sex is defined by the chromosomes X and Y. They found that offensive and walked out. And within about 6 weeks, he received a letter from his school saying that they had filed a complaint against him, that there was an investigation going on, even though they never spoke to him about it. And then before he knew it, he had been fired.
Now, that again was Kayla Toney, an attorney at First Liberty, talking about the firing of Dr. Johnson Varkey. The update here is that through First Liberty's help here, they wrote some letters to the school. The school didn't back down, so they went to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, got some help from there, and Dr. Johnson Varkey is going to be back in the classroom teaching biology to biology students by this fall.
My university degree is in biology. And biology and chemistry. Going back to high school through university, there was never any debate that sex is determined by, you get two X's together, it's going to be a girl. You get an XY together.
Chromosomes you're talking about.
Chromosomes, it's going to be a boy. That is the science. Three or four kids were upset in Dr. Varkey's class, were upset because he taught science. He taught reality. And they said, your reality, this biological reality, doesn't line up with how I feel. So we're going to walk out of your class. They go to the university officials, and they fire this guy. Mm. This is
insanity.
Well,
he needs to sue him. He needs to sue him for monetary damages.
This is what happens when you teach kids and you say things to them like my truth.
Yeah.
Because you're going to believe whatever you want.
All right, Ray, I want to talk about this from a biblical perspective for just a moment. This whole movement, especially the transgendered movement, what is going on? Why is the culture in general rebelling against
why has the culture become so revolting?
Well, that too. But what is going on here, spiritually speaking here?
The New Testament uses this phrase, the darkened heart and the darkened mind. It's the mind and it's the heart and it's the moral center cut loose from any morality, from any standards of truth. It's where the human mind and the human heart ends up. It's the end of the road when you rebel against the God who made you. And, you know, as Fred said, back in the day, this couldn't happen, right? You couldn't have a biology teacher fired for teaching biology, stuff that is non-controversial and true. But when you have a young generation, and part of it, Chris, is what you said, the My Truth generation, that feeds into the idea that I can invent truth, but you invent truth at your own peril, because truth is determined by the God who made us, who created the universe around us. And I think it was John Calvin who said the human heart is an idol factory. When the heart is darkened, you set up an idol of your own desires. I am whatever I think I am. I know I was a boy made this way, but now I feel like I'm a girl, and you make an idol of your own desires. It's the darkened heart writ large across our society. It's a massive rebellion against God and the truth of God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's really interesting that they are attacking this science. I've yet to hear somebody attack the science of gravity. Go ahead, kid, and tell me gravity doesn't exist. I'll take you up to 30,000 feet in an airplane and open the door. Do you still believe gravity doesn't exist? If you do, jump out and see what happens. And you say, well, that's insane. Well, what's happening in our system is insane.
Yeah.
We are rejecting scientific fact.
Yeah. You know, the part, too, that if somebody wants to say, I was born a male, but I feel like a girl. I feel like a female. Okay. I understand. I've never experienced that, but I can understand what you're saying to me. Okay. But if you say, if you're born a male and you say, but I'm not a male, I am a girl, I am a female, that's insanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's certifiable. That's, you go to the loony bin a few years ago for saying, if you went around acting like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you see the distinguishment, what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
This is beyond a man who says he feels like he's a woman. This is somebody who says, no, I don't feel like I'm a woman. I am a woman. And you're supposed to, therefore, put me in women's sports, for example.
Yeah.
Did you see up in, was it Connecticut a couple of days ago? They had a high school basketball game.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Same part of the country.
Massachusetts, yeah.
It's like Mississippi and Alabama. Yeah.
No, it ain't.
Well,
but anyway.
No, I meant together. They're in the same region is what I meant.
Yeah. I take offense to that.
Yeah. Regionally, Chris, they are the same. Okay.
No, it starts with an M, but it's not the same. Yeah. And they can, anyway, better stop right there. We do have a few supporters in Massachusetts.
God bless them.
God bless them. And
yes, God bless them.
Yes, and if they can live in that blue lunacy, I say, you go, you're go for it.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, in Massachusetts, a couple of days ago, it made some news outlets.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a high school basketball game. And it was a girls, two girls, teams playing each other.
Mm.
One of them had a dude,
yes,
who said he was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to play on the girls' basketball team. He injured three girls so bad, they had to call the game off.
Yeah.
They had to call the game off. This guy would look like to me, he's like 6'4". 220 pounds, or I don't know how big he is. He's going up against these young
bigger
ladies,
the girls.
High school,
yeah,
girls,
yeah,
and injured three of them in one half, I think, under the basket or something like that. Anyway, and they had to suspend the ball game, and in fact, the other team said, we're not playing.
Yeah.
We're not going to do
that. They forforfeited the game.
Forfeited the game.
To protect their girls.
Yeah, and I'll tell you how far this goes. This lunacy is what I call it. Supreme Court Justice Jackson? What's her first name?
Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Okay. Remember, she was testifying,
mm-hmm,
before the Senate. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
A couple years back.
Yep.
And was it Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee?
Yeah,
Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee,
mm-hmm,
senator, said, can you tell us what a woman is? And her answer, now she's the Supreme Court Justice now. Her answer before the world was, I don't know, I'm not a biologist. Huh?
Yeah.
And
that's what she said, yeah.
She knows what a woman is, but she doesn't want to say it because she doesn't want to offend, mm-hmm, the transgendered,
exactly,
and those who sympathize with them. And I just thought, she got away with
that. If you want to know what insanity is, it's not really her answer. It's moral and cultural insanity to put a woman like that on the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Bingo.
Mind you, Biden promised he was going to put, in his words, a woman on the Supreme Court, specifically a black woman on the Supreme Court. So they made a big deal out about her gender, and then when she gets put on the stand on the hot seat, she can't answer a question about gender.
That's a good point. I wonder if they said, Judge Jackson, do you know what an African American is? I wonder if she'd have said, I don't know. I'm not a biologist. No.
She
would have said,
no.
She wouldn't have said that. She wouldn't have said that. It's only this issue where they pretend like they don't know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or pretend like they otherwise intelligent people act like this.
Was it the same hearing? The question was asked of one of these candidates, judicial candidates. Can a man have a baby?
May have been.
And they refused to answer that. Can a man have a baby?
Yeah, and wouldn't even answer that.
And they wouldn't answer that.
Wouldn't answer that. You know, I wanted her, Marsha Blackburn, to follow up with this question for the Judge Jackson there, who's now Justice Jackson.
Hmm.
Do you know what a tornado is? And she looked at her, and if she'd have been consistent, she said, No, I don't. I'm not a meteorologist. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't answer that question. I don't know what a tornado is. Anyway, what we're pointing out here is the idiocy, the lunacy, the craziness, the insanity of this movement, this transgendered movement that's going on out there, to the point where in some cases children are being taken out of their home.
Yeah.
In the state of Arizona, state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Because they identify one way or another, and the parents won't acknowledge that, at least not to the satisfaction of the child protection system.
And our girls are being injured.
Yes, absolutely. And there are some people who are pushing for boys to be allowed to compete against girls in the Olympics.
Yes.
I don't think the Olympic Committee has agreed to that, but there's a push for that.
Some sports bodies have, yeah.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.